And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, I've been asked to keep you all apprised of my adventures with Sam's and Walmart. My wife was attacked in a Sam's on the 21st of February. And I want to let you know, as of today, they've done nothing. In fact, I was lied to yesterday. I was told someone would call me about close of business. Didn't happen. I just got off the phone with them. And the legal department has it. Well, what happens when the legal department has it is they sit on it, waiting for you to get tired and go away. Then they can say they won. Not gonna happen. And as of tomorrow morning at this time, I'm going to be on the phone to the Arkansas Attorney General about the fact that Sam's and Walmart do not protect their customers. And since it's an interstate company, I'm going to be on every federal agency I can find. And since, from what I can find out, they do sell things to state and federal governments, I'm going to see about stopping those contracts. Because if, in fact, they're putting the lives of their customers in danger and they don't have safety plans, that's a violation of federal law, especially those companies that have federal contracts. When my wife asked for their safety plan, because when she was attacked in front of an employee, no less, she asked for security and they said no. And then the guy doing the attacking said, I spend so much here, I can say and do what I want. They're not going to say a word to me. Well, I tend to think until that day we had spent more there than he did. Both my wife and myself had been employed by major companies, and we bought a lot of stuff there. Well, not anymore. So, just want to let folks know for future reference. If you go to Sam's and Walmart, go in groups because they're not going to protect you. Remember, El Paso Walmart is where the massacre took place. I think it was August of 2019. Guy walks in, shoots the place up, and not a single employee said a word about guy walking in the door wearing a gun, carrying a rifle, rather. And the manager said, well, there was no security because he didn't want to infringe on the sensibilities of the migrants who came into the store. Yeah, and they carried a number of them out on stretchers. This is a dangerous time. And if you're too stupid to see it, you don't need to be running companies. All right, today's March 25th, 84th day of the year. 281 days remain till the year is over with. On this day in history, about the year 708, Pope Constantine becomes the 88th Pope. And he'd be the last Pope to visit Constantinople until 1967. And I think Constantinople is now Istanbul. I may be wrong, but I think that's the case. 717, Theodosius III resigns the throne to the Byzantine Empire. He enters the clergy. He heard God. 919, Romanos Ekopinos seizes the Bukolion Palace in Constantinople, becomes regent of the Byzantine Empire, Emperor Constantine VII. In the year 1000, Fatimid Caliph al-Hakim B. Amir Allah assassinates the eunuch chief minister Marjawan and assumes control of the government. 1306, Robert the Bruce becomes king of the Scots. For those that are not familiar with that, that was in Scotland. 1409, the Council of Pisa convenes in an attempt to heal the Western Schism. 1576, Jerome Savage takes out a sublease to start the Newington Bluff Butts Theatre outside London. 1584, Sir Walter Raleigh is granted a patent to colonize Virginia. 1655, Saturn's third moon, Titan, is discovered by Christian Huygens. 1708, a French fleet anchors near Fife Ness as part of the planned French invasion of Britain. 1802, Treaty of Amiens is signed as a definitive treaty of peace between France and the UK. 1807, the Swansea and Mumbles Railway, then known as the Ostermouth Railway, becomes the first passenger-carrying railway in the world. 1811, Percy Bysshe Shelley is expelled from University of Oxford for publishing the pamphlet The Necessity of Atheism. 1821, traditional date of the start of the Greek War of Independence. The war actually began February 23, 1821. 1845, New Zealand Legislative Council passes the first Militia Act constituting the New Zealand Army. 1865, American Civil War in Virginia. Confederate forces temporarily capture Fort Stedman from the Union. 1894, Coxey's Army, the first significant American protest march, departs Massillon, Ohio for Washington, D.C. 1911, in New York City, the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire kills 146 garment workers. 1911, Andrei Yushchinsky is murdered in Kiev, leading to the Belice Affair. 1917, the Georgian Orthodox Church restores its autocephaly, abolished by Imperial Russia in 1811. 1911. That's the status of a hierarchical Christian church whose head bishop doesn't report to any higher-ranking bishop. This term is used primarily in the Eastern Orthodox and Oriental Orthodox churches. It's been compared with that of the churches within the Anglican Communion. Russia, though, since the Bolshevik position was there is no God, they did nothing. And the Tsar had demanded that the church report to him in 1811. 1918, the Belarusian People's Republic is established. 1924, on the anniversary of Greek independence, Alexandros Papanastasiou proclaims the Second Hellenic Republic. 1931, the Scottsboro Boys are arrested in Alabama and charged with rape. Now, I grew up hearing about that incident. There were nine African-American teenagers ages 12 to 19 accused of raping two white women in 1931. Landmark set a legal case from this incident that dealt with racism and a right to a fair trial. The cases included a lynch mob before the suspects had been indicted. All the juries were all white. The trials were rushed, and there were disruptive mobs inside and outside the courtroom. It's commonly cited as an example of a clear miscarriage of justice in the U.S. legal system. Well, I got another one for him here. Now, March 25th, 1931, two dozen people are hoboing on a freight train traveling between Chattanooga and Memphis. The hobos being an equal mix of African American and Caucasian. Group of white teenage boys saw 18-year-old Haywood Patterson on the train and tried to push him off, claiming it was a white man's train. A group of whites gathered rocks and tried to force all the black men to get off the train, but were not successful. So the white teenagers who had started the problem went to the sheriff and reported that they'd been attacked by a group of black teenagers. The sheriff deputized a posse and searched the train at Paint Rock, Alabama, and arrested the black Americans. Two young white women got off the train and accused the group of raping them. And all but one 13-year-old in the group was convicted of rape and sentenced to death. Now, there was no medical evidence that ever supported the fact that rape had took place. But allegation equals guilt. And that became quite a cause célèbre, as it's called. 1941, the Kingdom of Yugoslavia joins the Axis powers with the signing of the Tripartite Pact. 1947, an explosion in a coal mine in Centralia, Illinois, kills 111. 1948, the first successful tornado forecast predicts that a tornado will strike Tinker Air Force Base in Oklahoma. 1949, more than 92,000 Kulaks are suddenly deported from the Baltic states to Siberia. Now, for those that are not familiar with the term Kulak, that was a term used toward the end of the Russian Empire to describe peasants who had over 8 acres of land that they were working. In the early Soviet Union, particularly Soviet Russia and Azerbaijan, Kulak became a vague reference to property ownership among peasants who were considered hesitant allies of the revolution. So, by getting rid of the peasants that owned land, somebody who was supported by the system could go in and take that land. 1957, U.S. Customs seizes copies of Allen Ginsberg's poem Howl on obscenity grounds. In 1957, the European Economic Community is established in West Germany, France, Italy, Belgium, Netherlands, and Luxembourg as its first members. 1965, civil rights activists led by Martin Luther King Jr. successfully complete their four-day, 50-mile march from Selma, Alabama to the Capitol in Montgomery, Alabama. 1971, the Army of the Republic of Vietnam abandoned an attempt to cut off the Ho Chi Minh Trail in Laos. The Ho Chi Minh Trail was used by the North Vietnamese to smuggle people and equipment into the South. 1975, Faisal of Saudi Arabia is shot and killed by a mentally ill nephew. 1979, the first fully functional space station orbiter, Columbia, is delivered to the John F. Kennedy Space Center to be prepared for its first launch. 1988, the candle demonstration in Bratislava is the first mass demonstration of the 1980s against the communist regime in Czechoslovakia. 1995, WikiWikiWeb, the world's first wiki, and part of the Portland Pattern Repository is made public by Ward Cunningham. 1996, the European Union's Veterinarian Committee bans the export of British beef and its byproducts as a result of mad cow disease. Mad cow is actually a bovine spongiform encephalopathy. 2006, Capitol Hill Massacre. A gunman kills 6 people before taking his own life at a party in Seattle's Capitol Hill neighborhood. And in 2006, protesters demanding a new election in Belarus following the rigged 2006 Belarus presidential election clashed with riot police. Opposition leader Alexander Kozulin is among several protesters arrested. A lot of births and deaths on this date in history. Holidays and observances. Anniversary of the Oringo and the Feast of the Militants in San Marino. Christian feast days. Feast of the Annunciation in Christianity. If March 25th falls in the Holy Week or Easter Week, the feast is moved to the Monday after the second Sunday of Easter. It's also known as Lady Day. Christian Saints Day. Elwood II of Sherbon. Barontius and Desiderius. Blessed Marie Alphonsine, Daniel Gattas, Omayan Kof in the Ukrainian Greek Catholic Church, Dismas the Good Thief, Humbert Merolius, Corinus of Tegernsee. In Russia, it's Cultural Workers' Day. It's also the earliest day on which Seward's Day can fall. March 31st is the latest, celebrated on the last Monday in March in Alaska. Empress Menin's birthday in Rastafari, EU Talent Day in the European Union, Freedom Day in Belarus, Independence Day in Greece. It celebrates the start of the Greek War of Independence from the Ottoman Empire in 1821. International Day of Remembrance of the Victims of Slavery and the Transatlantic Slave Trade internationally. International Day of Solidarity with Detained and Missing Staff Members of the United Nations General Assembly. International Day of the Unborn Child internationally. Maryland Day in Maryland, Medal of Honor Day in the United States, Mother's Day in Slovenia, New Year's Day, or Lady Day in England, Wales, Ireland, and the future United States from 1155 to 1751. Until the Calendar Act of 1750 moved it to January 1st. NZ Army Day, Quarter Day, first of four in Ireland and England, Struggle for Human Rights Day in Slovakia, Tolkien Reading Day, and it's Waffle Day in Sweden, Norway, and Denmark. A lot of things happening on this date. Let's see. In the year 31 AD, the first Easter was celebrated according to calendar maker Dionysius Exiguus. 1436, Florentine Cathedral, Cattedrale di Santa Maria del Fiore, with then the largest dome in the world, was consecrated by Pope Eugene IV. It actually started being built in 1296. 1807, the British Parliament abolished the slave trade throughout the British Empire. They installed a penalty of £120 per slave for ship captains. 1895, Italian troops invade Abyssinia, that's Ethiopia. And in 1960, the first guided missile was launched from a nuclear-powered submarine, the Halibut. Okay, let's see what else we got. In the year 1, the origin of Dionysium, the incarnation of the Word, 421 AD, which was a Friday at 12 p.m., the city of Venice was founded. In 1150, the Tichborne family of Hampshire, England, started a tradition of giving a gallon of flour to residents to keep deathbed promise. Okay. 1306, on this date, Robert the Bruce was crowned Robert the First, King of the Scots. He killed his rival, John Cummin, Lord of Badenoch. In 1581, Portuguese Cortes calls Philip II the King of Portugal. In 1584, English explorer Walter Raleigh renews Humphrey Gilbert's patent to explore North America. In 1593, recantation of Luce. Dutch scholar Cornelius Luce recants his earlier written protest against witchcraft persecution in Trier, Germany, before officials in Brussels. 1598, Cornelius de Houtman's fleet departs for the East Indies. 1609, Henry Hudson embarks on an exploration for the Dutch East India Company to find a passage to Asia by sailing to the west. 1634, under a charter granted by Lord Baltimore and led by his brother, Leonard Calvert, the first Catholic colony was founded in Maryland. And in 1647, the tour ship Harlem is stranded in Taffel Bay at the Cape of Good Hope. 1669, Mount Etna in Sicily erupts, destroys Nicolosi, kills 20,000 people. 1740, construction begins on evangelist George Whitfield's Bethesda Orphanage in Georgia. 1776, the Continental Congress authorizes a medal for George Washington. Well, that note, I think we have come to the end of our... one last thing. In 1813, the first U.S. flag is flown in battle on the Pacific by the frigate Essex. All righty. We've been talking about strange, mysterious places. And, of course, we have... let's talk about what's been referred to as postcards from the edge. The world's first underwater post office was opened in 2003 at Hideaway Island Resort off the coast of the island nation of Vanuatu in the South Pacific. Conceived to increase awareness of the diversity of coral reefs and sea life, workers process hundreds of waterproof postcards every day. The flag that floats above the water actually signals that the post office, which is staffed by one of four scuba divers for an hour each day, is open for business. Travelers can duck dive 10 feet down or strap on some diving gear to hand off their mail personally. Or during off hours, divers can drop mail in a postal box that lies on the ocean floor close by. Now, the postcard that you mail can be sent anywhere in the world, and it'll be marked with a unique ink-free embossed cancellation stamp. And if you don't want to duck dive or scuba dive, assistants at the resort on Vanuatu will send it for you while you remain on dry land. There are also three submerged museums that attract a lot of attention. There's Archaeological Park in Italy. It's a hedonistic resort that dates back into the days of the Roman Empire. City's ruins were mostly engulfed by the 15th century. Today, you can snorkel among the preserved remains of antiquity in this underwater archaeological park. There must be a signal that goes out when I start doing the show, because everybody has to call. Well, now we have Museo Atlantico Anzerotti in the Canary Islands. It's Europe's first truly immersive museum. Features the art of artist, environmentalist, and underwater photographer Jason DeCaris Taylor. Scuba divers or free divers can explore his artificial reef comprised of 10 unique groups of sculptures, each made of a pH-neutral concrete material intended to become anchors for new coral growth. There's Baoliang Underwater Museum in China. Now, this is the world's oldest water level recordings of the Yangtze River. It can be seen in Fulang in China. Over 1,000 hydrological inscriptions carved in a natural stone ridge measure changes over 1,200 years. After descending more than 140 feet underwater in an enclosed escalator, protected windows give visitors a view of the ancient water table. Additional animal carvings and poetry written in calligraphy on the stones. And even though we seek the so-called road less traveled quite often in our wanderings, there are places where tourists are far from welcome. Whatever thrills these locations offer come with real consequences. You travel at your own risk in these areas, or you might encounter uncontacted tribes, but the chances of being murdered or detained are extremely high. Now, one of those places is the Bermuda Triangle. In a 1964 article in Argosy magazine, writer Vincent Gaddis first used the term Bermuda Triangle.
made reference to a 500-square-mile area of the Atlantic bounded by Miami, Bermuda, and Puerto Rico. But the locals and sailors have been talking about this area and the strange going zones in the Devil's Triangle for hundreds of years. Now, some of the first accounts come from the logs of Christopher Columbus. He kept those on his first voyage to the New World in 1492. He wrote about the compasses going haywire, unexplained lights, and great flames crashing into the sea. No one's yet figured out what those great flames are. Many say they're probably meteors. Upping the intrigue, many scholars claim William Shakespeare's 1623 play The Tempest is actually written about a real shipwreck in that area. And in more modern times, at least 50 ships and 20 aircraft have completely disappeared in that region. Some of them are pretty big. All 542 feet of the USS Cyclops, plus 300 men and 10,000 tons of manganese ore, vanished in March of 1918. It didn't even send out a distress call. Two sister ships disappeared in that same area 25 years later. And other times, like the case of the schooner Carol Deering in 1921, the vessel came ashore with no sign of passengers or crew. Among those unfortunate planes to tangle with the triangle were the five bombers of the U.S. Navy's Flight 19 that left Fort Lauderdale, Florida, December 5, 1945. With compasses malfunctioning, pilots became extremely disoriented and flew around aimless until they ran out of fuel. And a rescue plane, a Martin Mariner, was sent out later that day. It vanished as well. Neither the 27 men nor any of the aircraft were ever recovered. According to the U.S. Navy's official report, it was as if they had flown off to Mars, and maybe they did. More recently, the SS El Faro and its 33-member crew sank off the coast of the Bahamas in 2015. And a private MU-2B jet from Miami lost radio contact and crashed in 2017. Witchcraft, sea monsters, aliens have all been blamed for the incidents. Although scientists, it's sitting safely near ivory towers, are more apt to suggest causes such as underwater methane eruptions, Gulf Stream currents, and operator error. Well, despite its reputation, the Bermuda Triangle is actually part of a heavily trafficked route. And there are those that claim the number of wrecks are no higher than average. Of course, all those making those claims aren't out at sea in the Bermuda Triangle. Well, one area that I've been into was the Darien Gap in Panama. On the border of Colombia and Panama, the Darien Gap is a treacherous wilderness where you're more likely to die from a scorpion sting or snake bite as an attack by an armed gorilla. And I don't mean the big monkey. This inhospitable 10,000-square-mile swath of land effectively separates South and Central America and provides the only break in the world's longest road, the 18,640-mile-long Pan-American Highway. It runs from the southern tip of Argentina all the way up to Alaska. This gap is the only stretch that can't be traveled by car. The unforgiving terrain ranges from mountainous rainforest to marshland, with more than one roaring river thrown in to boot. Fastidiously preserved, the area is made up of two large national parks through which no highway has yet been built, despite multiple proposals. It's barely inhabited and practically lawless. While Spanish conquistadors first failed to tame the gap, pirates and runaway slaves made it their home. Today, that territory is shared between a handful of indigenous tribes, including the Kunan, the Imbarahuanan, remnants of a Colombian insurgency militia from the 1990s called the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, or the FARC, as well as migrants and drug smugglers. Now, safe passage has to be negotiated with FARC members and immigration coyotes. Countless refugees trying to get to the U.S. have perished en route, as well as quite a few tourists, including a young Swedish backpacker who was mistaken for a spy by the FARC. And they don't give second chances. The only reason we were left alone is we were heavily armed. Now, let's talk about what's been referred to as Doomland. The Democratic People's Republic of Korea may be the most insulated and outwardly hostile nation on the globe. Subject to worldwide sanctions because of its widespread human rights abuses, its economy's in dismal shape. And instead of reforming, its leaders have blamed other nations for their situation and remained hostile toward outsiders. Still, in spite of all that, the nation has welcomed tourists, mostly from China, and even expressed interest in boosting those numbers. Despite Kim Jong-un has stated the country's goal is 2 million annual visitors. That's a big jump from the 100,000 or so who make that trip now. And there are certainly some attractions in that country. The 105-story Yongyong Hotel, also known as the Hotel of Doom, is a gargantuan logistical nightmare that began in 1989 in its attempt to erect the largest building on the Korean Peninsula. And now sits abandoned, covered by LED displays in a desperate attempt by the government to cover its mistake. Also holds the world record for being the tallest unoccupied building on the planet. And there's an alpine-style ski resort that Kim Jong-un had built in tribute to his days at a Swiss boarding school. And maybe the most ironic tourist attraction is the International Friendship Exhibition. That's a museum that holds every gift given to one of the supreme leaders, including a bulletproof car that came from Joseph Stalin and a train carriage that was given by Chairman Mao. Well, despite all these offerings, North Korea is far from hospitable. The West is seen as an enemy by the government, and although Westerners are treated well by locals, there's no telling how far the state will go. Otto Wambier, an American college student, became a somber reminder of this in 2016 when he was charged with subversion by the North Koreans for trying to take a propaganda poster back home. He was sentenced to 15 years in prison, but mysteriously fell into a coma while in custody. For a year, he was kept comatose before he was finally sent home. He was hospitalized in the U.S., but died a week later. Well, let's talk about Bhutan. While it's impressive at 24,836 feet, Gangkhar Puensum in Bhutan isn't the world's tallest mountain. No one's ever been to the top, though, making it the tallest unclimbed peak. The reason that nobody's been to the top has not been lack of interest. It's been spiritual prohibitions. More than 570,000 Burmese, around three-quarters of the country's population, practice Buddhism, and they believe peaks like Gangkhar Puensum house their spiritual deities. Since 1994... climbing mountains higher than 20,000 feet has been banned in order to protect their spiritual role. Conservation also plays a part. Operating under a philosophy of the four pillars of gross national happiness, government leaders have dedicated themselves to sustainable development, environmental protection, cultural preservation, and good governance. As such, nearly all tourists are charged a daily fee of about $240. And this aggressive approach has been largely successful in preservation. Three-quarters of Bhutan's dense forest still stands untouched, while in neighboring Nepal, the natural beauty is regularly trampled by visitors. Take Mount Everest, for example. As of 2020, it's been successfully climbed by 4,000 people. But Gangkhar Puensum remains completely untouched. Well, we have a lot of legends and stories of people fighting against Mother Nature. Well, one of those stories that I had read growing up and enjoyed was Swiss Family Robinson. Well, very few people know there is a Hawaiian Family Robinson. Back in 1864, wealthy Scottish widow Elizabeth Sinclair bought the Hawaiian island of Niihau from the indigenous people for $10,000 in gold. That's about $160,000 today. Her descendants, the Robinsons, still own Hawaii's second smallest island, and they prohibit visitors. Now, the families preserved the native inhabitants' culture as well as the island's environmental integrity. One current member of the Robinson family, whose name is Keith, is a skilled conservationist and has been credited with keeping several Hawaiian plants from going extinct, along with successfully recolonizing the endangered monk seal. In order to keep the property and make enough money, though, they've begun to offer occasional private tours of the island's rich and diverse jungle. And they've permitted the U.S. Navy to conduct drills and experiments. Now, the Robinsons, of course, aren't the only inhabitants. An estimated 70 indigenous in Ohio reside on the Forbidden Island. They live primitively, subsisting by fishing and farming. They have generators for electricity. In a 1977 essay in the Honolulu Star Bulletin, Keith wrote, "The Ohio people legally are our guests. Unlike tenants, they pay no rent. There are no formal obligations. We've carefully maintained their privacy and have not permitted the kind of immigration and settlements that has submerged and destroyed the Hawaiian culture and language everywhere else." And I guess if push comes to shove, and things such as COVID run rampant, the Robinson family can withdraw to their little island and be left completely alone. Well, very few people seem to be aware that there are a number of tribes in India and South America that have remained completely isolated from modern society by choice. While it's hard to get an exact number, it's estimated that scattered across the globe, there are about 100 small tribes living outside mainstream society. They want to avoid the modern world and hold on to their ancient traditions. So they've hidden themselves in inhospitable mountain or jungle terrains. But they do have an intimate knowledge of their environment and an understanding that most people in today's modern society have long forgotten. Many of these, like the Sentinelese and Jarawas who live in the Andaman Islands off the coast of India, rely on hunting and gathering to survive. They know where to look to find the delectable hunting and chewing a bee, repellent plant called Uyukawalanin to keep them safe while foraging. They also have a detailed knowledge of 150 plant and 350 animal species. In Brazil, the Awa hunt with 6-foot-tall bows and take in wild capuchin monkeys that they consider family members. Other tribes like the Yoro in Paraguay and Yanomami in Venezuela apply their knowledge to growing sustainable crops. Now, these cultures vary widely, of course. The Yoro dwell in groups of 4 or 5 families. Men mainly hunt, women stay home to raise the children and the crops. The Anunnaki, meanwhile, live in big communities of up to 400 members. All reside together in large circular structures called llanos, and they make all decisions on a communal basis, rejecting any chief or leader. I mean, these uncontacted tribes have hidden themselves in mostly inhospitable mountains and jungle corners of the world in order to hold on to their ancient traditions. Though I will point out, back in the 1800s, a completely unknown tribe walked out of the forest of California. Who knows what our... And if you've never been in the jungle, you have no idea of how isolated certain areas can be. There are some areas we had to be airlifted into and they're taken out by helicopter. Most tribes have rich, deep spiritual traditions that are usually based on the importance of nature. For example, the Awa believe in a separate domain where forest spirits live. They communicate with the realm by performing ritualistic chants by moonlight. Many encounters between these tribes and mainstream societies have had harrowing results. The isolation means having developed the same immune system responses to many diseases we view as mild. When the Mathis tribe was reached by the Brazilian government in the 1970s and 80s, 3 out of 5 villagers were lost to measles. The Awa, likewise, were contacted in the 80s when the government built a railroad through their land. 91 members of that tribe died of malaria and the flu, leaving only 25 survivors. And the Sentinelese witnessed many of the neighboring tribes succumb to the flu and measles when it All that having been said, understandably, the result of these interactions is often hostility and distrust toward the outside world. So the Sentinelese have a penchant for shooting arrows at anybody attempting to observe them. And for this reason, they remain the most secretive of uncontacted tribes. The only knowledge we do have about them comes from observation by helicopter and boats out of range of their arrows. We know so much about tribes like the Awa and the Jarawa and the Yanomami because a portion of their populations made appeals to a mainstream society. Threats to their way of life have forced them to come to terms with their neighbors. And one of the tragedies that these tribes face is if overcoming illness wasn't challenging enough, corporate and government interests have continually threatened a group's livelihood. And society as a whole often turns a blind eye to or outright exploits these people. In Brazil, logging, both legal and illegal, and poaching have increasingly encroached on the land of the 20 or so tribes that live there. As the Amazon is rapidly stripped of its natural resources, the Awa have already lost 34% of the forest on their legally protected reserve. On the Andaman Islands, the Jarawa are harassed by so-called human safaris, where tour groups attempt to spot members of the tribe. And illegal hunting and fishing has threatened their food supply. The Jarawa have reported attacks and sexual abuse at the hand of outsiders, including a 2011 incident where poachers greatly injured a youth. These incidents almost always go unprosecuted and reflect a cool indifference toward their plight. These tribes carry on traditions dating back tens of thousands of years, making them older than all of modern civilization. It's estimated the Sentinelese and the Jarawa have thrived for over 55,000 years. And while they often look down on as primitive, in fact, these tribes are extremely complex. Uniqueness should give us pause to reflect on how wonderfully diverse the human race is. It's interesting to note that I saw some things done by the indigenous inhabitants in some of the South American areas I was in that absolutely boggled the mind. Well, from the jungles of South America, let's turn to Area 51. You know, there have been theories bandied about forever about what's going on at the classified desert military base. For decades, if you ask government officials about Area 51, they'd say there's no such thing. But clearly, something unusual has been going on roughly 83 miles northwest of Las Vegas in the Nevada desert. Ever since President Eisenhower established his 38,400-acre patch of dry lake bed as some sort of top-secret site in the 50s. The name actually comes from the old Atomic Energy Commission grid number system on maps. Speculation has swirled that it was used for experiments on recovered UFOs and aliens. Some have also alleged the moon landings were staged there, or that Area 51 was used to help cover up the reputed Roswell, New Mexico spaceship crash. All these claims had predictably been met with stony official silence, and government maps showed only a black spot when you looked at it. Then in 2017, when the Pentagon confirmed spending $22 million on a program to analyze anomalous aerospace threats, including reported close encounters of UFOs, talk of Area 51 began all over again. As rumored that it was actually everything it had been alleged to be. It was a research facility on reverse engineering captured UFOs. Despite any logical explanations about things seen at or recovered from the location, the imaginations of many continue to run wild. 2019, college student Matty Roberts created a Storm Area 51, They Can't Stop Us All event on Facebook as a joke. Still, more than 2 million people confirmed their attendance, resulting in the Air Force rushing to issue warnings everybody needed to be kept out. About 40 still ventured to the outskirts of the base before being turned away. And in 2020, the Pentagon announced a new task force that would be looking at UFO reports, and it would later release videos of Navy pilots encountering speeding foreign objects. Both of these moves reignited public interest in conspiracy theories about Area 51. complicating the struggle to dissuade people from infiltrating the site. It's Annie Jacobs. It's an author of Area 51, an uncensored history of America's top secret military base, told CNN. Area 51 is the most mysterious, most secretive base, which only adds to the public fascination and stories about it. I used to speak at the Roswell event until Don Smith decided I was politically unacceptable. I outsold him in their bookstore. He just couldn't stand that. You know, there's a vast galaxy of places here on Earth where scientists and sometimes even starry-eyed tourists can enjoy an out-of-this-world experience. With the landing of the rover on Mars, a return to the moon on the horizon, and billionaires attempting to quench millionaires' desires to be space tourists, simulations of the interstellar space experiences have been popping up all over the planet, from Utah to Kazakhstan. There are some earthbound space stations that set up a method of aspiring space cowboys to train for interplanetary travel. As NASA has announced plans to send astronauts back to the moon by 2024 and manned missions to Mars by the late 2030s, simulacrums of interstellar space voyages have been popping up all over the place. From Florida, China, researchers have experienced close encounters of the invaluable kind at these extraterrestrial outposts located in the deserts and underwater that create the challenges and excitement of life beyond the Earth's boundaries. There's a Mars Desert Research Station in Utah at the end of the unfortunately named Cow Dung Road in the desert of southern Utah. There's a 40-acre mock research center that hosts teams of six astronauts, usually engineers and researchers, who live for months at a time as though they were 140 million miles away, rather than just 7 miles from Duke's Slick Rock Diner in the town of Hanksville on planet Earth. This location was chosen because of its stark landscapes. The geology is nearly identical in age and appearance to that on Mars. Simulated space base features a geodesic dome observatory and a two-story cramped cylindrical habitat, which is only 26 feet wide. Inhabitants pay up to $1,500 for a two-week stay and are not permitted to leave the station without a spacesuit or without waiting 5 minutes inside a simulated pressurized airlock. Walkways between the structures are covered in tarps to mimic the tunnels that protect against the harsh Martian temperatures that can fall as low as minus 195 at night. It's run by the Mars Society, a non-profit space exploration advocacy group with 10,000 enthusiasts from more than 40 countries. And the base is actually funded by donations, including $100,000 from SpaceX founder Elon Musk. According to Hanksville Mayor Kim Wilson, we're the Martians. They're the aliens. Well, we also have Mars Base 1 in China, plopped in the middle of the Gobi Desert. This rugged installation is a sign of China's desire to compete with the U.S. in the race to explore the Red Planet. According to facility founder Bai Fan, the base is still on Earth. It's not on Mars, but we've chosen a landform that matches closest to that of Mars. The nearly $6 billion complex boasts a dome and 9 modules, including living quarters, a control room, a greenhouse, and an airlock. Visitors are also invited to go on organized exploration missions through the Mars-like desert landscape. And while the research station in Utah is focused on scientific discovery, Mars Base 1 plays more to science fiction and is open to space-obsessed students. You know, scientists have criticized C-Space, the company behind the project, for not setting a course for scientific accuracy. Their plans to put another $370 million into the base and hopes of attracting 1 million visitors a year by 2030. Future updates to lure tourists include a space-themed hotel and a restaurant. You can even get fried Mars bars. Then off in Florida, you have the Aquarius Reef Base. It's 9 miles off the coast of Key Largo, Florida, and 63 feet beneath the surface of the crystal clear water. and it's called the Aquarius Reef Base, which is used by NASA astronauts to practice space exploration techniques as part of its Extreme Environment Mission Operations Program. It's also known as NEMO. The underwater lab is approximately the size of the International Space Station, or another way to look at it, as a school bus, and accommodates 4 to 7 astronauts for up to 3-week training missions simulating zero or low gravity situations. The space station beneath the waves is supported by a 33-foot diameter surface support buoy that supplies air, electricity, high-speed internet, and communications. Since 1957, more than 65 offshore underwater laboratories have been built around the world. But Aquarius Reef Base is the last one still in operation today. And then, 60 feet below the surface of the Caribbean Sea, off the coast of Curaçao, aquanaut Fabien Cousteau, the grandson of Jacques Cousteau and industrial designer Yas Bihar, planned to erect the Proteus Underwater Space Station, the world's largest undersea research station and habitat. Currently in the concept stage and still awaiting funding, it's a 4,000-square-foot lab that will provide a new research environment 4 times larger and more technologically advanced than any underwater lab ever constructed. It's intended to be the aquatic version of the International Space Station. It'll house up to 12 scientists and researchers from around the world during these missions. A 2-story circular structure will be anchored to the ocean floor with stilts to include labs, personnel quarters, medical bays, and a moon pool where divers can access the ocean floor. And it also featured the first underwater greenhouse and video production facility.
They have great hopes for it. Then we have, in Canada, the Flashline Mars Arctic Research Station. It's nestled on Baffin Bay's desolate Devon Island in the Canadian High Arctic. The Mars Society's Flashline Mars Arctic Research Station, said to have the most red planet-like environment of any of the simulation sites. The largest uninhabited island in the world, Devon offers an unforgiving tundra so extreme it's home to scant wildlife except musk-ox and small birds. Temperature climbs only to about 50 degrees in the summer, as low as minus 58 in the winter. The Halton Impact Crater, where the base is located, is the summer home to NASA's Halton Mars Project, where a group of 10 researchers, scientists, and students conduct geological, botanical, and other studies every season. Goals to develop and test new technologies and procedures for Mars explorers to study the challenges humans will face living in such unforgiving conditions. Then we have High Seas in Hawaii, located in an isolated spot on the slopes of the Mauna Loa volcano on the Big Island of Hawaii. The Hawaiian Space Exploration Analog and Simulation Habitat offers a shockingly Mars-like landscape at an elevation of 8,200 feet above sea level. 6-member crews of NASA-funded scientists and researchers from around the globe inhabit the 2-story geodesic dome, where they work in a space station environment for periods as long as a year. They eat freeze-dried meals, take 30-second showers to conserve water, and they have to wear space suits every time they leave the dome. To replicate the communications gap between Earth and Mars, they wait 20 minutes for their emails to reach family members, another 20 for a return. And scientists to wear devices to track their vitals, answer endless questionnaires about their behavior, and write in their journals regularly to give the mission commanders a grasp what astronauts will experience on a long-range space voyage. And then, in the middle of the Pacific, about 2,500 miles off the east coast of New Zealand, is the South Pacific Ocean uninhabited area. That's where old space junk and satellites go to die. In 1993, NASA and other international space agencies agreed to dispose of dead spacecraft, either in a graveyard orbit or in this watery grave. This way, orbit of space around Earth didn't end up looking like a junkyard on the New Jersey Turnpike. More than 160 spacecraft are permanently stowed away underwater in this isolated location, far from the shipping lanes, where they can safely crash and avoid threatening human life on their way to their final destination. One of the most famous long-term residents of that area is the Soviet area Mir Space Station, which is in a watery grave.
Then in Kazakhstan, we have the Baikonur Cosmodome, home to Borat's original and subsequent movie films. Also happens to be the birthplace of Soviet space exploration, which is now open to the general public. The site was where the Soviets launched the first Sputnik satellites, and where cosmonauts Yuri Gagarin blasted off to become the first man in space on April 12, 1961. The largest space center in the world, Baikonur Cosmodrome, remains active today, launching astronauts from all over the planet to the International Space Station. Space travel fans from the far reaches of Earth are also invited to explore this historic center and witness new launches. Five-day tours detail the history of the Soviet space program and offer close-up looks at the rollout of rockets and blast-off for new missions. Space Center is leased to the Russians by the country of Kazakhstan until 2050. So you got a little time to get there. Then we have a number of space camps. Imminent promises of commercial rocket travel sent kids' interest in the stars through the stratosphere. And I'm going to talk about three of the best space camps that can be attended. There's Camp Kennedy Space Center in Florida. It's across the river from Cape Canaveral, where NASA has been launching rockets since the 50s. It's a stellar day camp for kids. It allows them to spend a week getting up close and personal with all things cosmic. There are tours of the inactive Kennedy Space Center. They can participate in astronaut training and spend a virtual day on Mars. You can go to kennedyspacecenter.com and see more about it. Then there's Virginia Space Flight Academy, aimed at young space cadets ages 11 to 15. It's a sleepaway camp in the virtual stars. It teaches kids rocketry and robotics and includes field trips to the nearby NASA Wallops flight facility, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration Weather Facility, and the Navy Surface Combat System Center. Then there's Space Camp in Huntsville, Alabama. It's open to 4th through graders through high school students. It's a residential camp, offers classes in space, aviation, robotics, and cyber technologies. Activities include simulated launches to the International Space Station, rocket assembly and design, and the construction of the students' own Mars colony. Unique programs are offered for the hearing and visually impaired, along with other special needs campers. It's quite the facility, from everything I can understand. All right. As you can see, there's a lot of very unusual places on the planet. And unless you have traveled, I mean, I've got relatives who've never been more than 50 miles from where they were born. They're proud of it. But I know when I went to South America, it was like going to a different planet. The Pan Canal was the company that ran it for the canal zone for the U.S. And their main town was like going back to the 1950s. It was just unbelievable. And a lot of the, you could see some of the tribe members who were selling crafts on the street. It was just absolutely unbelievable. And anything and everything you would need was right there in that town. At excellent prices, surprisingly enough. And then out in the jungle, you would see abandoned encampments that dated back before World War One. In fact, one of them dated back to the Civil War. There was an old fortress that was used as a prison camp for what were called traitors, those who were prominent and had supported the South. On that note, we've run out of time. We'll be back tomorrow. And once again, you've been listening to Ken Hudnall and the Ken Hudnall Show. Until then, have a truly great evening.